Morning, Saints. She's a good skeleton crew. Last week we were poking out the doors, and this week we could all fit in the front row. But no worries. Right. We'll carry on with our adventure with the nation of Israel through the wilderness. So if you've got your Bibles, let's turn to Numbers chapter 20. And we'll carry on with the nation of Israel. Last time we looked at still at Kadesh Barnea, after their failure, after them sending out the spies, and them really rejecting God's promises. They had the harsh words that they were going to have to, their carcasses would fall in the wilderness. And they didn't like that idea, so they decided, no, we're going to go up. So we looked at the sin of presumption last time, and they were defeated before the enemies. So that was back in Numbers about 14, I think. So there's a few chapters going on, but it's interesting. From Kadesh Barnea in the Bible, there's a period of about 38 years that really God says nothing at all about. In their wandering around and around in the desert, they come back to this place again, which is where we are in Numbers 20. But for 38 years, there's really nothing talked about. They wander around and around, and obviously it's a time of unbelief and judgment, and there's actually nothing to say. But it's a little bit like that. And even in the book of Hebrews, it says, you know, it jumps from by faith the nation of Israel walked through the Red Sea. You know, the book of faith, Hebrews chapter 11. And it says, by faith they walked through the Red Sea, and then it jumps a whole period. By faith they walked around Jericho. So it sort of jumps all of that in the middle, like there's nothing actually worth recording. But it's actually like that with our own lives. If our own lives are, it's the things of faith that will be recorded. And there will be things of faith, you know. Whether it's just the start and the end, there'll still be things of faith that are recorded. But like for the nation of Israel, all of this wandering is actually nothing worth saying, you know, because it's all fleshly, it's all carnal, it's all really unbelief, and it's failure and failure and failure. And but all of these things are written for our instruction, because we also are like that to some degree. You know, we have times of faith and we have times of failure. So this is where it's good. And God's grace is still toward them, despite their failures. So when you get to chapter 20, it starts off and they're still in the same place. They've come back to Kadesh Barnea. And these events are after they've done really their 38 years of wandering, and they're on the brink of heading in. But you're going to see that a lot of these leaders are actually going to pass away. And so you get to chapter 20, and then the children of Israel and the whole congregation came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month. And the people stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. So here you've got one of these leaders, Moses' sister, Miriam. Now she was big because she was Moses' sister. She was big as far as an influential leader. There's not much actually spoken about Miriam. You've got, remember at the start when they come through the Red Sea, and you've got Miriam takes up the tambourine and leads them all in a dance and a song, and she's got this song about how good God is and that he's delivered them, and you know, it's a song of faith, and it's a big thing, and the whole nation goes out with her. So you've got that scene, and then you've got this scene here where she dies, and you've only got one other sort of scene in the middle. And I haven't actually looked at that. So we'll have a little look at that this morning, and then we'll carry on with this chapter. So go back a few chapters to Numbers 12, because there's one event that the Bible records about Miriam during this wilderness wanderings. Numbers chapter 12. In verse 1, then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. So they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken also through us? And the Lord heard it. So the only other instance you've got really of Miriam is this, that at some point during this wilderness, she actually takes offence against Moses. She takes offence. And in verse 1, it says that part of this offence was she didn't like the fact that he had taken a Gentile bride. Okay? There was something here that she took offence to. And in verse 2, you've also got another little hint into maybe, this may be the real reasoning behind it. It says that, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? So you've got this little hint that she was offended at Moses for some reason. Maybe Moses was, in her eyes, far too important in the nation of Israel, that she wanted a little bit of recognition for who she may or may not have been, you know. But she takes offense. She doesn't like Moses. She says, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? In other words, what about me? You know, I'm also pretty important here, you know. So she takes offence, and we really need to watch out for taking offence, because normally they're just really little things. We can take offence at injustices, things that are done wrong to you and me. Sometimes it can just be a word, someone that can just say something, or you can overhear, or someone said this. Well, I had this the other day. I heard someone had said something about me, but I didn't know the context in which it was spoken. And a lot of times we don't know the context, you know. And I spent about 3 or 4 days really stewing on it, you know. Like, it actually got me. It got me, and I took offence, you know. And I was talking to Wendy about it, and she said, you've got no idea what sort of context. It wouldn't have even been in that context that he said it. And until she said that, oh, yeah, you're probably right, you know. But I spent all that time taking offence over just what I perceived to be something that was an injustice. But Miriam, obviously, something goes on here, because she takes offence against Moses. And we really need to, just in our own lives, really keep an eye on that, because they grow, you know. They grow. And normally when you take offence, the first thing you actually do is you normally build a fence. And then you put a sign on it saying, stuff off, or keep out, or... But that's normally what happens. When you take offence, you build one. And then you put a sign on it, and you withdraw, and you isolate, and all of these things. And Miriam is actually doing this here, you know. She's talking to Aaron. So she's including others in this, and she's bringing it against Moses. A, because probably she's jealous that she wants a little bit of the credit. He's not the only one who's important. What about us? And she takes offence that he's taken a Gentile bride. I read quite a good example in the week. There was these two guys in hospital, and both were quite badly sick, and they had to be isolated in this room. And they wanted them just to be really quiet and rest, so they put them in this room where there was no radio and there was no TV, and they just wanted these guys to ease it, you know. And one guy was, first of all, they started talking, you know. They talked all about their families and the kids that they had had and the experiences that they had. So they did all this because they had nothing to do with their time, just two guys. And they talked about all the different things that life had brought them, and this went on for a few days. When they got through all of that, they had sort of run out of things to say, and one guy was parked next to a window. So what he would do was he would describe what was happening in the park next door to the other guy who was in the other bed. And he would talk about, you know, that when he looked outside, he saw the kids that were playing with kites. He saw the kids with their dogs and the balls. And he saw the families having picnics and all of these things, and what the weather was doing and what people were doing outside. And this was all good. And then at one point, a thought entered into the mind of the other man in the other bed. And it was this: why should he get the window bed? And at first he threw it out, you know, ditched it, but it kept coming back. And then he started to think, why? What is this not fair? Why should this guy be by the window, and I'm actually not? And then he thought, no, he threw it out again, but it just kept coming back and back and back. And then he thought, well, if this guy was any sort of a guy, he would be willing to exchange places and give me a time by the window. This goes on and on. Next minute, the man just, he starts really stewing upon it, you know, and he takes offence. And then he turns a little bit sour toward the guy, and they stop talking, and he starts putting up barriers. And one night, the guy that was next to the window, whatever he had sort of like a lung disease, and he starts coughing at night, and he has quite a bad attack. He had something on his lungs, and the other man just remained in his bed looking at the ceiling and remained silent, and the other man was grasping for the buzzer to get the nurse, and the other man just remained still looking at the ceiling. So unfortunately that night that man died. The guy next to the window, he died. And in the morning they come and took his body away, and when everything was done, the other guy remained, and when the nurses came in, he said, look, do you mind moving me across to the window? They said, oh, that's all good. So they moved him across next to the window, and once they had tucked him in and got him all settled and everything was good, he thought, okay. So he propped himself up on one elbow and looked out the window, and he stared straight into a brick wall. But when I read that example, I thought, that's hard, but quite often true, you know? Take offence, you know? This guy, he took offence, and it became something in his life, and then he didn't help when he should have, and it all turned around, and the other guy was actually a real blessing to him. Yeah. So somewhere in here, Miriam, she takes offence at Moses. And has the Lord only spoken through Moses? So what's the result of this? Okay. And the Lord heard it. Now verse 3, now the man Moses, who was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. Who wrote that? Moses wrote it. You must have to be in the spirit, I think, to write that. Without there being any sort of pride involved there. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron and Miriam, come out you three to the tabernacle of meeting. So the three came out. Then the Lord came down in the pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both went forward. And then he said, hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. And I speak to him in a dream, not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house, and I speak with him face to face, even plainly and not in dark sayings. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So the anger of the Lord was aroused against them, and he departed. And when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous, as white as snow. And then Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. So God was really displeased upon hearing this, that here were these leaders, and again it's another attack on Moses' leadership. And the judgment was that Miriam actually turned leprous, became a leper. Leprosy in the Bible is always a picture of sin, and you got a real out. What she was doing inwardly was displayed outwardly in Miriam. Instantly she became leprous. So God he judged it right there and then. This is what's happening, and she was leprous. So in verse 11, so Aaron said to Moses, O my Lord, please do not lay the sin on us in which we have done foolishly, in which we have sinned. Please do not let her be as one dead, whose flesh is half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb. So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, please heal her, O God, I pray. And then the Lord said to Moses, if her father had but spit in her face, would she not be shamed 7 days? Let her be shut out of the camp 7 days, and afterwards she may be received again. So Miriam was shut out of the camp 7 days, and the people did not journey till Miriam was brought in again. And afterward, the people moved from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. So there was sin involved, and it had to be judged. And God did this, but she had to be set aside. There was a set amount of time that was for her healing, and the nation didn't move really until she was ready. So in this chapter, you've got offence, you know, and Miriam is guilty of it, and it's something that God has put in there that we need to watch out for it, really, that we don't take offence, that we don't speak about those whom God has called and is using, and really not against one another, you know. The other thing that's in this little chapter is actually quite a cool picture of typology. Remember, Moses, every prophet and king in some way is a type of Christ, okay? And Moses also is a type of the Lord Jesus Christ. When he is rejected by his brothers, he goes and takes a Gentile wife. Same as Christ Jesus. When he was rejected by his own, he went and took a Gentile bride, you know, which is the church. Now, who is it that takes offence at him taking? It's Miriam that takes offence, okay? And when you get into the New Testament, what is the biggest trouble that the Jews actually have? True, that's true, they do. Apart from themselves, it's actually that grace has been given to the Gentiles, and it's a big stumbling block to the Jews. And you've got this thing, just as Miriam took offence at Moses taking a Gentile bride, you've got the Jewish nation that has taken offence that grace has come to the Gentiles, that they are the bride of Christ. Miriam turned leprous, okay, and had to be shut outside the camp for a set period of 7 days until she was healed again. And the camp never moved until she was healed and restored. So you've got that very same thing with the church and the Jewish nation. There's a set amount of time, you know. It's almost like they're outside the camp until their days have been fulfilled. And then they will be restored, you know. God still has a plan for the Jewish nation. They will be restored. They will look upon him whom they have mourned. Pierced, and, you know, yeah, there. Yeah, when the full number of Gentiles has come in, God will again turn to Israel. Who is it that prays for Miriam? It's Moses. The very one that she accuses and the injustices have come toward, it's actually Moses that asks that grace be given to her and that she be restored. Who is it that intercedes continually for the nation of Israel? It's Christ. You know? The very one whom they, through their accusations and insults and injustices. So you've got quite a cool little picture there, you know? Typology. Alright, go back to Numbers chapter 20 and we'll carry on. Okay, so Miriam dies. And then in verse 2, now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. For a change. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. How many times have you heard this? Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain or figs or vines of pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink. So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. Then verse 7, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, and gather the congregation together, and speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to their animals and the congregation. Okay, you got this whole scene replayed out again. They got the moaning continues, the grumbling continues, they got no water. Okay, and God says that there's a rock again by which I'm going to bring forth water. What does Corinthians tell us about the rock?
Christ.
Yeah. It tells us in 1 Corinthians 10, Paul speaking says that the nation of Israel drank spiritual drink from the rock, and that rock was Christ, and it says that rock followed them in their wanderings. So when Paul looked at these stories, he understood that Christ was actually the rock that gave them drink in the Old Testament. Do you remember when we first looked at the other time? Remember when they came out and they had no water to drink? And God said to Moses, I want you to take the rod of judgment. Remember that one? The one that he struck the river with, that was the rod of judgment. And I'm going to go and stand upon that rock, and I want you to strike the rock, and water will come forth. So in the first instance, there's a rock, okay, and he's to take the rod of judgment, and he's to strike it. And that there stood for Christ being crucified, because that rock had to be struck, it had to be smitten, it had to be hit with this rod of judgment. And that there is a picture, really, of the Lord Jesus Christ taking all the sin upon himself and being struck on our behalf. That is the smitten rock. Okay? How many times does that have to happen? That's right. Only once. Christ will never ever be struck again. And you get that when you look in the book of Hebrews. It's one sin offering. You know, it's always once, all through the book of Hebrews, that by one offering he's made holy, by one offering he's made perfect, you know. That sin is actually, the sin issue has actually been dealt with once and for all. In that first rock picture, he was judged with that rod of judgment. So when you come to this rock, you've got the same rock that's going to bring forth water, but it's different. What's the difference? That's right. Okay, how many... Are there more than one rod? Is there more than one rod? Which rod was he to take? Is there more than one rod? What's the other rod, Bob?
I'm not sure.
There is. And there is the rod of Moses and the rod of Aaron. Okay, so when you look at the first, in Exodus 17, God's really specific. I want you to take the rod of judgment by which you struck the river. He's really specific to Moses. That's Moses' rod, the rod of judgment. This time round, he just says, I want you to take the rod. And for it to fit properly into our type, Christ cannot be crucified again the second time. So, I've read a few different people, and they all actually differ on whether it's Moses' rod that is taken or whether it's Aaron's rod that is taken. For me, I actually believe it's Aaron's rod. And the reason is that, just like I said, that rock can only be judged once by the rod of judgment. So what is Aaron's rod? If you go back a couple of chapters in here, during their wilderness things, remember Korah's rebellion? Korah was of the priesthood family. He had certain jobs within the tabernacle, but it wasn't like the tribe of Levi. Okay, he had certain jobs, but he wanted more. You know, he wanted to be more important. So he rose up, and all the families with him, and they actually tried to take the priesthood off Aaron. And God responded to this by opening up the ground and swallowing them and all their families and all their tents and everything. The earth just actually opened up and swallowed them. And from that, because it was an attack on their priesthood, God said to Moses, look, for every tribe, I want you to bring a rod. And I want you to write the names on the rods, okay? And I want you to bring them into the tabernacle. And the one by whom brings forth buds, that'll be the person whom I declare to be the priesthood. Okay, so Aaron wrote his name on his rod, and it goes into the tabernacle. In the morning, when they wake up, Aaron's rod is the rod that first budded, it blossomed, and then it actually produced almonds. So Aaron's rod is the rod of resurrection because it did the whole process. Okay? Every other rod, there was nothing. So Aaron's rod is a picture of that only God can bring life out of death. All the rods in themselves were dead, but God, in Aaron's rod, it produced the whole package. You know? The God of resurrection. So when you get to this passage, he says, I want you to take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, and I want you to speak to the rock. So there's a big difference between this rock and the last rock. The first rock, he was to be struck. This rock, he takes the rod, but it's only to be taken and not used, but he's actually supposed to speak to it. So I've been thinking about this all week because it's quite... And I think there's actually a lot in this passage, really. There's a lot to be mulled upon and thought about. But this rod is the rod of resurrection. And it stands for a completely different principle by which water is to come forth out of this rock. This rock is the rock of resurrection. It's the resurrection power. And he is to have this rod, but actually only as a sign or what it stands for, and he's to confess or speak to that rock and it'll yield its water. So Aaron's rod, for me, is the rod of position, it's the rod of intercession, it's the rod of resurrection. All of those things, like Christ is no longer on the cross. He is seated in the heavenly realms. And that, Yeah. So Moses was to take this rod, but it stood for something, you know? And he was to confess, speak to the rock. So it's a completely different principle by which he's asking Moses to operate here. Okay? The first one is Christ crucified. This is Christ resurrected. Can you think of any instances in the Bible where God spoke and it brought forth life? Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Jesus, Lazarus, come
forth. Yeah. Yeah, from a position of authority, life comes forth. The other one I thought of was, you remember the the centurion that came to Christ? And he said, look, I've got a sick servant, you know. And they had this dialogue, and he was a Gentile, because he was a Roman. And he said, look, I'm a man under authority. All I've got to do is tell my guys to do something, and they'll do it. And Christ said, well, I'll come with you. And he said, no, you actually don't need to do that. All you need to do is speak, you know. And I know that my servant will be healed. And Christ marvelled at this, that, you know, that and here's one in whom faith, that it can be found. Not even that in amongst Israel, he said. He marvelled at this guy. And obviously, and Christ spoke, didn't even need to go to the guy, and life came forth. And I thought that's a real good picture, just like in here, and those ones that you've said, where Moses is commanded just to speak the word, and life will come forth. Yeah. Speak to the rock, so not strike it. He was called to speak to it. So what happens? So we get to verse 9. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock? So... for 40 years, the nation have had an absolute guts full of Moses. They've tried to get rid of him time and time again, tried to get new leaders, they'd had enough of Moses, and I think after 40 years, Moses had had enough of them. No more Mr. Meek, humble.
Very humble.
Very humble, that's right.
Most humble.
Yeah.
Lots of patience.
Yeah. But he's finally blowing a stack.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I had a boss that was like that, who wouldn't, he was unflustered and it was just like a balloon filling up. You know, just drip, 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 and then when it exploded, you just get out of the way, because when it was full, it was full, you know?
Mess over every wall.
What's that?
Mess over every wall.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Moses has actually reached a point here, because he's had an absolute gutsful of the nation. And in the way that he addresses them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Who was the one that was going to bring water out? Yeah, God. So he's Moses. Whatever, it's got on top of Moses. It's got on top of him, and he's forgotten what God has said to him, and he's lost the plot. Really, he's saying that we're the ones that are going to bring water out, and he addresses them not as God's beloved nation, but a bunch of rebels. Yeah, of which they were. So, yeah, no more Mr. Humble, no more Mr. Meek. He's had enough. And then in verse 11, "Then Moses lifted his hand and he struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation, their animals, drank. And then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, 'Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I've given them.'" So he lost control and he disobeyed God. And because of that, he was actually guilty of unbelief. God says to him in verse 12, "Because you did not believe me." The very things by which the nation itself had been judged that they would not enter the land was actually unbelief. They just failed to believe that God would do what he said. And Moses here, for some reason, all the events get on top of him, and this act actually hinders him from going into the promised land. He acts in unbelief. And God says, "You did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel." Is there any other versions? What does someone else's version say instead of hallow? Honor. Yep. It just means to set aside as holy. "Because you did not believe to set me aside as holy." In other words, he took action upon himself. He struck the rock twice when he should have actually spoke to it. And in that way, God was not honored. In that way, God was not glorified. So somehow in all of this, God was wanting to be honored and glorified as the one who can bring forth water. But it was a principle just by speaking. Faith, you know, but Moses completely blew it, and because of that he can't enter. You might think it's quite a harsh judgment because he's had a pretty clean slate up until this point. But yeah, he's not allowed to enter. But when you probably in another one we'll look at sort of these reasons why He's not allowed to enter, really, because he's actually a picture of the law, you know. For the law came through Moses, but grace and truth came through Christ. And for them to enter, they actually needed a new leader. Like Joshua is a picture of Christ. For them to enter into Canaan, there's a new leader. But there's nothing wrong with Moses, but for some, you know, he's not allowed to go in. And that's why, actually, when you see him on his deathbed, it says that he was 120 years old. There was nothing wrong with his eyesight. There was nothing wrong with his physical being. He was absolutely perfect, you know. And it's like that. The law is absolutely perfect. There's nothing wrong with it. But a new leader is needed to take you in to the promises of God. The old one can actually only take you so far. And when you look at the wilderness wanderings, the whole purpose of it really is that the nation would know the weaknesses of their heart, you know. That's what it's about. All our times of failure, it's that we would know there's something wrong with us and we need Christ. Yeah, and that's what the law does. All it can do is show you your need. But you need another leader. But yeah, so Moses was rejected because of this. So how do we, what does this passage mean to us? You know, how does this affect us? Because what you could say that Moses only knew Christ crucified. You know what I mean? He struck the rock the first time. He struck the rock the second time. That's all he actually knew, possibly of God, you know? And there's lots of Christians around that are actually like that. All they know is that their sins have been forgiven. But God wants much more from us, that we go on to know the rock, not only as the smitten rock, but as the resurrected rock. Yeah, one that we can speak to. One that we have the rod of Aaron, which is, just stands for, we are seated in Christ in heavenly places. That is our position. We have a position of priesthood as being in the beloved. So from that position, we speak to our Christ, to the rock, you know. But Moses, maybe he only knew Christ crucified. And there's many Christians that's actually all they do know. They know their sins are forgiven and they actually never go on any further. It's interesting, despite knowing that, God still brought out the water. Yeah, but it actually, it's a little bit like that. Like, God will still use us in our failure. You know, he may not be as glorified as he would want to be. You know, like in this instance, he's saying, just speak to the rock, but Moses doesn't. And he's not glorified because Moses doesn't. But he brings forth water out of his grace to feed all the congregation and to feed their animals. And God does exactly the same. Despite our weaknesses, he will still bring forth water for others. But what he wants is for himself to be made holy through the process. You know, I think he will still act. But in one way, Moses doesn't understand a certain amount about God, or God is not hallowed in the process. But water still came forth. Yeah. So God still acts in grace, despite our failures. But for us, maybe we don't learn a certain aspect about the resurrection, you know, because of our failures, or because we don't come from a position of being in authority and actually allowing Christ to work on our behalf. That's what I mean. I think there's lots in here. And I'm still thinking lots about it. I think there's actually probably a truckload to ponder. I think there is. Yeah. There will be. Yeah. 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 When I read that, I thought, that's amazing. Even through failure, God still, in his grace, provided. You know? Yeah. So, but for Moses, there was a judgment or a result of not acting in faith, you know. And he couldn't go into the land. He could see the land, but not go into it. Yes. Yeah, I think Aaron's rod was placed back in the tabernacle. Yeah.
Because it reminds that Moses took the staff from the Lord's prison.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah, it's interesting when you read different, like I said, you read different people, some people say that he took the rod of judgment and the rod of Aaron, but I think what's prominent from the last few chapters and up until here, I believe it is actually Aaron's rod that he took, because he wasn't to use it, so it wasn't judgment. Yeah, it stood for the priestly, or rod, you know. There's more in there, and I think it's just, if you have a good look at it and mull on it, you'll see more, I'm sure.